Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Marina Kremianskaya, MD, PhD, to discuss the results from the Phase 1-2 MANIFEST trial with pelabresib plus ruxolitinib in patients with myelofibrosis. Kremianskaya is the medical director for the inpatient oncology unit at the Mount Sinai Hospital and an assistant professor of medicine, hematology, and medical oncology at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai in New York, New York. Pelabresib is an investigational selective oral bromodomain and extraterminal domain inhibitor under evaluation in the global open-label, non-randomized, multi-cohort MANIFEST trial. The trial was divided into four cohorts to evaluate pelabresib in patients with JAK inhibitor pretreated myelofibrosis, pelabresib plus ruxolitinib in patients with ruxolitinib pretreated myelofibrosis, pelabresib plus ruxolitinib in patients with JAK inhibitor-naive myelofibrosis, and pelabresib alone in patients with essential thrombocythemia. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Kremianskaya discussed the results from Cohort 3 of the MANIFEST trial in treatment-naive myelofibrosis, differentiating features of pelabresib and recently approved JAK inhibitors, and next steps for the investigation of BET inhibitors in this population. Today, we're joined by Dr. Kremianskaya for an episode of Onc Live On Air to discuss the results from the MANIFEST trial with pelabresib plus ruxolitinib in patients with myelofibrosis. How are you, Dr. Kremianskaya?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, and thank you for having me here.
Anytime. All right, so before we get into the results, tell us a little bit about pelabresib.
So pelabresib, formerly known as CPI-610, is a first-in-class selective small oral BET protein inhibitor, and it functions by disrupting chromatin remodeling and therefore affecting gene transcription. Its effect on myelofibrosis is in large part due to its inhibition of NF-kappa-B signaling, which is really important in pathogenesis of myelofibrosis. I think importantly, especially for the study, preclinical studies using this and similar drug in myelofibrosis mouse model showed that not only does it have an effect on myelofibrosis cells, also there's a synergistic effect between BET inhibitors and ruxolitinib and other JAK inhibitors. And so I think that it's exciting that that preclinical work sort of is translating now into this clinical effort.
Of course, we know that the study was started prior to the approvals of fedratinib and pacritinib in this population. So with that in mind, how would you say that these approvals have affected the unmet need mentioned in the publication?
So both of those drugs are also JAK inhibitors, similar to ruxolitinib. And I think while they may have some special population that they could potentially be more beneficial for example, in the case of pacritinib, for those patients that have lower blood counts, specifically platelets, they're still JAK inhibitors, and most of their effects are similar to what we see with ruxolitinib. So most of the effectiveness is in reduction in spleen, as well as potential symptom improvement. And what we're looking for in current combination trials is to have a more profound effect on those parameters, but other additional effects as well. So I think while these drugs are very effective in doing what they do, our current research is really looking at getting deeper and more meaningful responses in patients with myelofibrosis.
So then diving into the study, walk us through the baseline characteristics of the patients enrolled on the trial. And would you say that they reflect patients seen in clinical practice?
Yes, I think most patients that were enrolled in this trial would have been the patients that typically probably would have started JAK inhibitor therapy. So these patients had myelofibrosis that was either intermediate 1-2 high risk, with the majority of patients falling into intermediate risk category. Most of these patients were relatively early in their diagnosis. So I believe the median time to diagnosis was 8.5 months. Like I said, these patients, if they weren't eligible for this trial, probably would have started on JAK inhibitor therapy. So the kind of population that we would normally see in clinical practice.
What stood out to you about the results?
So what's interesting about the results in the study is that we are comparing, at least historically, to those patients that were treated with JAK inhibitors as first-line therapy, which is the current standard of care. Response rates in terms of spleen responses and symptom responses were pretty impressive. So the spleen response rate, defined as spleen volume response of 35, was 68% at 24 weeks. This is significantly improved over what was seen in the initial ruxolitinib studies. And what's also interesting is that these responses were durable, as at week 48, the response rate remained at 60%. We also looked at the symptom response as defined by the total symptom score, 50% reduction, so TSS 50 at 24 weeks. And it was 56% at 24 weeks in the study. And again, the response was durable, as at 48 weeks, 43% continued to enjoy the responses. And the numbers were really even higher if you look at the best response that patients have had throughout the study, looking at both the symptom response and the spleen response. In addition, some patients had enjoyed anemia responses. There is a figure in the paper nicely showing hemoglobin levels over time. And while there is often that initial dip in hemoglobin that we see with starting JAK inhibitor therapy, specifically ruxolitinib, is also seen in the study, that those numbers level off and eventually go up. And this is especially seen in those patients that were anemic with hemoglobin less than 10 at the start of the study.
How did the combination affect the JAK2 V617 mutant allele fraction, and what is the significance of that?
So this study followed the variant allele fraction of JAK2 and other driver mutations. As in most studies, we're trying to use this as a sort of surrogate marker for disease modification, though at this point really is not well defined yet what number we're really aiming for. But in this case, about 30% of patients had a variable allele fraction reduction of more than 25% in JAK2. And I think what's important is that that number corresponded to those patients that enjoyed spleen volume responses as well, sort of pointing us in the direction that there is a correlation between clinical responses and molecular responses here.
How was the combination tolerated? What were some of the common adverse effects?
The combination was well tolerated in general. As expected from these types of drug, the most common adverse events were thrombocytopenia and anemia, and most patients were able to remain on study. Some patients required dose reductions. But the median dose of ruxolitinib, for example, remained at 10 milligrams twice a day, which is a standard dose. And then the median dose of pelabresib was 125 milligrams, and it's dosed 2 weeks out of three. Again, most patients were able to remain on study drugs, which I think is really important, and they remained on the study drugs long term. The other adverse events that were seen were mostly GI, with some diarrhea and nausea. And I think that was, again, expected from what was seen with pelabresib before. And patients were able to remain on study and continue taking these drugs with minimal supportive care. So one factor to consider in this combination study is there, for example, increased risk of infections. And so one of the more common adverse events that was seen, non-hematologic adverse events, was respiratory infection, which was reported at 29%, but most of these were low grade. And another one that I think we are paying attention to, because we really see it fairly frequently with JAK inhibitor therapy, certainly with ruxolitinib by itself, is that herpes zoster was seen in about 11% of patients.
What are the next steps for this research?
This publication focused on arm three of the MANIFEST study, which had two other arms. This arm was actually added on a little bit later, once the activity with combination as an add-on therapy was seen in arm two of the study. So this is phase two, arm three, where there was no control arm. Currently, phase three, MANIFEST 2 study is ongoing. It's already completed enrollment. And in this study, patients are randomized to either receive ruxolitinib plus pelabresib or ruxolitinib plus placebo. It will be exciting to see the results of this phase three placebo-controlled randomized study that will really give us more information about the effectiveness of combination as compared to ruxolitinib alone as the sort of first line in JAK inhibitor-naive patients. What's important in the study is that we're starting to look at a number of different factors that are important in myelofibrosis. So all studies, we're looking at spleen responses and symptom responses, which of course are very, very important in this patient population. But as we talk more and more about disease modification and what does it mean, what can we do to really improve the progression of disease in these patients, we're looking more at things like, is there an effect at the molecular level? Are we reducing the JAK2 and other driver mutation variable allele fractions? Are we improving cytopenias, for example? So looking at hemoglobin and transfusion independence in these patients. And is there any effect on what happens in the bone marrow in these patients? And that's not just looking at the bone marrow fibrosis, which obviously could also be important, but looking overall at the morphology of what's going on in the bone marrow of these patients. And so this study is addressing all of these things, and hopefully we'll get more information from the phase three.
Do we have a date for that readout yet?
I think that there is hope that we'll have some of the results by ASH 2023.
Well, thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you this morning.
Thank you so much.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.